All right, so just very briefly, I'm gonna show my face and I'm switching my camera off after that because I think it's better for bandwidth and I will be looking to the left side for the next 1.5 hours in any case. So you won't see anything too interesting there. Okay, then second step, share screen. So I'm going to give a briefish introduction to ILCSoft and the main building blocks of ILCSoft and how things work there in general. This is in a sense in a workflow kind of world, the predecessor to the last software tutorial, which basically started with the products of this tutorial. So after this tutorial, you should in principle be able to, at the very basic level, do your first simulation, run the reconstruction on top of this simulated events, and afterwards also produce DST or even mini DST files that can then be used for further analysis. I have structured this in the following way. I will first just give a brief introduction to ILCSoft in general. What are the key components? Describe how they interact briefly, and also give you a few pointers and links to where you actually can find the code and where installations or current installations of ILCSoft can be found. And afterwards, I'm going to dare the adventure of actually interactively run the first steps of the complete chain. So we are going to do a simulation of a few events. We are going to reconstruct these few events, and we are also doing analysis in very big quotes. We are basically looking at the output files of these steps. And I'm trying to do this interactively. I hope everything works. I have rehearsed this, but as usual, things probably don't work out as they should when it counts. Finally, we are also starting to write our own Marlin processor. In this 1.5 hours, it will not do too much meaningful work, but you will have at least the basic ingredients that you need to actually write your own Marlin processor. If you have questions throughout, I would just suggest to ask them right away. Either raise your hand, I will try to monitor the participants list, or just put it into the chat and I will try to answer these as we go along. And then one final note before we start, especially in the second part, there are a few exercises that you can try, but I would suggest that we first go through all of this. And then, if there is still time, we can start with the exercises, or you can start with the exercises after we have gone through everything, because it might get a bit out of hand if I try to debug 10 problems if you try to run along with this. But there should be time at the end to ask a few questions if you want to run these examples, and you can always contact me afterwards if you run into any problems with this tutorial. Okay, so first, what is ILCSoft? How does it look like? How does it work? This is an overview over ILCSoft. If you have seen high energy physics software frameworks, it probably looks kind of familiar because they all work very similarly. There are usually different steps that have to be done if you want to do data analysis or if you want to do anything with physics events in high energy physics. Usually, you first have to generate your events, then you can simulate them, simulate how your detector responds to these generated events. After that, you can reconstruct them. Naturally, if you have real data from a real detector, you can skip the first two steps and only start with the reconstruction. And afterwards, you can analyze all this data. And these four steps here can comprise multiple sub-steps. For example, in reconstruction, we usually have dedicated steps that do the tracking. We have dedicated steps that do the data reconstruction in the calorimeters. And so this can be can go down to very detailed levels, actually. And there is potentially multiple steps involved in the reconstruction step. And all these different parts basically have to have a way to communicate with each other. And this is done via the so-called event data model. And this event data model in ILCSoft is called LCIO. And I will talk about this on the next slide, I think. Also, all of these steps have to know how your detector looks like, how your detector is laid out. And this is done via the detector geometry. And this is handled in ILCSoft by DD4HEP. You know, I will also talk about DD4HEP a bit on the next to next slide. And finally, all of these different parts are managed and orchestrated by something that's called Marlin, the application framework. And you will also hear about that on one of the next slides. And just as a final remark, ILCSoft is the common software for all linear collider studies, and it has been used and is still used by quite a few collaborations, actually. Most importantly, by Click and ILD, which is probably what brought you here today. Okay, so LCIO, as I said, it's the part that allows the different components to talk to each other. It basically defines the language in which these different parts can talk to each other. And in ILCSoft, LCIO also provides the way how data is persisted to file. So if you want to write out a file, it is written in LCIO format. And it is also read in LCIO format. And as you can see in this LCIO, in this event data model, there are different data types that can be very useful to describe your event data. If we start at the very top, it's the Monte Carlo particle, which holds information on which type of this particle, which how much energy, the momentum, the mass, etc. And if we want to try and simulate the detector, we have to, of course, simulate hits in the silicon tracker, for example, or in any other tracker. And we also have to simulate hits in the calorimeter. And these are described by the sim tracker hit and sim calorimeter hit. And for real data, we have different types of raw data, which are then summarized or processed into a tracker hit and a calorimeter hit. And finally, at the very end of reconstruction, we will compile together, or we will collect different tracker hits, for example, to form a track, or we collect different calorimeter hits to form a cluster. And these different objects all have their own data type, and they form this hierarchical structure that you can see on the right side. And as you can see by the arrows here on this picture, they actually also form a hierarchy in the real world. So for example, a reconstructed particle can be comprised of some tracks and a cluster, or reconstructed particles can then themselves be comprised of other reconstructed particles. For example, if a C decays into two muons, you will be able to form this link. So you can build this hierarchy, and all these objects are more or less directly interconnected. The only important exception to this is that you will never be able to go directly from a reconstructed particle, for example, to a Monte Carlo particle, or from a tracker hit to a sim tracker hit. So the Monte Carlo simulation world and the real data world are separated by intention. So this is intentionally. If you want to have this connection, you have to make use of these LC relation types, which actually make it possible to basically bridge the two worlds. Naturally, in an event, there can be more than one reconstructed particle. So we will have collections of reconstructed particles, and these reconstructed particles, and in essence, all of these types are stored in LC collections. So there will not be one track per event, there will be a collection of tracks, for example, per event. And then we just collect together different collections of tracks, clusters, reconstructed particles, etc., into a class that is called LC event. And from this LC event, we can access the different collections via their name. So each collection gets a name. And when we store this data to file, we store all of the data of the objects in the collection and the name. And if you want to later access this, we just have to use the name. And then we can read in this data again. If you want to know more about LCIO, also some more documentation or some more technical documentation of all these entities that are on the picture on the right here, just click on the link that is on this slide here. It will redirect you to the GitHub repository of LCIO, where a lot of useful links, for example, to the Doxygen documentation can be found. So this is LCIO. This is one of the main parts that allows the different components or the different tasks in our processing chain to talk to each other. As I mentioned, the second important part is the geometry, the detector geometry. And here ILCSoft uses a package that's called DD4HEP, so detector description for HEP. And this has originally been developed for the linear collider communities and is now also used, for example, by LHCb, and also CMS is switching to DD4HEP. So this is a really useful tool. And the main feature of DD4HEP is that there is only one detector model that is used for everything in the processing chain. So we use the same detector model for simulation and reconstruction, visualization, and also analysis. This has not always been the case in HEP. There have been approaches where different models have been used to do the different steps. And of course, keeping these models synchronized can be a problem. So DD4HEP just basically uses one detector model in memory that can be used for everything. Now in DD4HEP, a detector is fully described via a set of C++ detector constructors and a few XML files that basically describe the layout of the detector. And for ILD and all the linear collider communities, there is a complete set of different detector models that you can use. And you will probably only need to actually come up with a new detector model if you want to study something very specific in a very specific geometry, or if you want to construct a new detector from scratch, basically. But for more or less all of the options that are currently under discussion in ILD, a detector description is available, and you basically just have to use the right XML files, and the rest will happen automatically. Since DD4HEP allows to do all this reconstruction and analysis and also simulation thing, it has to be split into different components. And for example, there is a DDG4 component that is used for simulation with Xeon 4, and in the case of ILCSoft, this is what we will be using for detector simulation in the form of this DDSim executable or Python script that basically steers the simulation of a generated event through the detector. And for reconstruction, we will be using DDREC, which is the interface for reconstruction. But this is more or less well hidden inside Marlin. So unless you want to do something very specific with reconstruction that directly involves very specific geometry pieces, you should be able to just come by with using everything that is provided in analysis. There is a package called LCGEO. I'm not sure if this is a link. It's not, unfortunately. This is a package on GitHub, where all the different linear collider geometries are collected. So basically, if you want to check out which detector models are available, you can go there and have a look to see which detector models you can use. And as I mentioned, DDSim is the Python program that runs a full simulation. Finally, Let's go to Marlin. It's, as I said, the application framework is used throughout ILCSoft, and it's basically responsible for executing all the tasks that should be executed for a given event in the correct order and passing all the information from one task to the next. And in the end, of course, also storing the output of this. And every task in this process chain is implemented as a processor, which is an actual C++ class. And here a task can be as trivial as digitizing a hit collection, for example, or it can also be a really complex thing like running the complete particle flow analysis. But each individual task will be a processor. And we will come to this when we write our own processor in the end. Now, since you might have different needs for your applications, Marlin applications can be fully configured via XML files. We will also come to this. And in this XML files, you can define things like global parameters. You can define the actual chain of processes that should be run. So you can exclude a few processors. You can run additional processors. And processors usually also have some parameters that configure their behavior. And these can also be changed in these XML files. These XML files are usually created with an editor. There is a way to output all the available available processor parameters, and we will come to this later. And I've just put here a link to the Doxygen documentation of Marlin. If you want to follow it, you can actually see which functions a processor has to implement in order to be successfully run in this whole processing chain. And the most important ones are actually here on the bottom. So you can initialize your processor. You can do certain things on a run header. So for each run, you can do, for example, update your run number. Then, of course, the most important one, probably you can process your event and do whatever you need to do with the event. And in the end, you can also run some checks after you have processed the event to see if everything is still as you expected. And of course, finally, you will clean up or produce some final output histograms. But we will come to this also later on. If you want a bit more literature, I'm just going to flash this slide here. These are publications for LCIO and Marlin, and also a few for DD4HEP and the detector simulations with DD4HEP. If you want, you can check these out. This is quite a bit of literature. It does look a bit dated, but it's still, the tools are still the same. This is simply because ILCSoft has been going for the last almost two decades. And it has naturally evolved, but the basic principles are still very similar to the beginning.
Let me just jump in here for a second. So if you write a paper, please do cite the software. Our software does not get enough credit. So this is a very good slide to have. Please cite those frameworks if you used them.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, actually. And we should probably also make these at least the ones that are not citable into Zenodo links, but that's a story for a different presentation probably. All right, I've talked a lot about ILCSoft and different packages. You can find all or almost all ILCSoft packages on GitHub. They are in this GitHub. It's not repository, it's organization, GitHub organization. And if I click, I can't do them. I click on this. This is how the ILCSoft GitHub organization look like. And you can see there are different packages here. Each of these links here is a package. For example, if you go on LCIO, you will come to the LCIO repository where we have a README, where we have links to further information, And this is available for all or almost all the packages that are in ILCSoft. So if you want to have a quick look at the code, you can just go to this GitHub organization and try to find your code here. If you know in which repository you have to look, it's even easier. If you don't know in which repository to look, just write us a mail or contact us, and we will try to give you the right hints or answer your question directly. Most importantly, since this is all on GitHub, this makes it very easy to download the software for you. So you just have to basically can clone all these repositories. If you want to make changes, you can open pull requests, which is of course always a nice thing for us, because if you make the changes you want to see, then we don't have to do the work, or we can at least spare a few cycles and just have to look at these changes you want to introduce. If you just observe an issue, it's also very easy to open an issue on these GitHub repositories, where you can basically just report problems, like things are not working as they should, or if you have questions, you can also ask these questions there, and we will try to answer these as quickly as possible. Or if you have requests on what the software should be able to do but is not yet to do, you can also do these things via GitHub. If you want to make a pull request or open an issue, you need a GitHub account. And I've just put here the link to where you can join the GitHub thing. And ideally, you create an account with an identifiable username. So probably something that's close to your real name, or at least makes it possible to identify who you are by your GitHub username. If you want to open pull requests or have a more detailed look about how this whole GitHub workflow works, there is this tutorial from Andre Seiler, which I've also put the link here. And you can have a look at that to see how you can most effectively contribute to ILCSoft and how you can most effectively open pull requests such that we don't have too much overhead sorting out all the technicalities and the administrative stuff. Now, naturally, you don't have to install ILCSoft yourself. That can be quite a process. Instead, we centrally provide reference installations of all current versions of ILCSoft, and currently the most recent one is V02.02.02. And if you have access to AFS or CVMFS, these two places are places where you actually can find the most recent installation. And with every ILCSoft release, there come a few configuration files for ILD, which basically are just, for example, how we do reconstruction or the standard configuration settings on how we do reconstruction. And they also, this ILD config also comes with a few examples that we will be using in the second part. And usually there is an ILD config release for every ILCSoft release. So also for the configuration, we are currently at V02.02.02. And also here you can find these again on AFS or on CVMFS at these two locations here. Now the latter part, ILD config, you can also easily just get from GitHub with this command that is linked, that is put here. And this is basically where the second part will start with this command. So are there any questions to the first part or to the general structure of ILCSoft, or on where to find information for ILCSoft? Otherwise, I would just basically start with the adventure of going interactive. And as a first question, can you see my screen here? And is the font big enough to be read, or should I make it bigger?
It's good for me.
Okay, I get a few yeses in the chat. So what we will do, what I do is I'm currently in an empty directory. So the whole tutorial will be from scratch. And as I said, I start with actually getting the ILD configuration from GitHub. And I've typed this often enough to be able to do it without copying, I hope. And as you will realize, this will take a bit of time because this repository is actually quite big and it will download, I think, close to 300 MEB. Yes. And then it will take a bit of time to actually check out the latest branch. As you can see here, I'm directly getting the VO2.0.2.0 version. In principle, if you just clone it, you will get the master branch. And in principle, this should work, but there is no guarantee that this will always work. So there might be a few changes in ILD config, which are not compatible with a given ILC soft release. But usually, also the master branch should work with the latest ILC soft release. If you have never checked out a branch from GitHub, you will be slightly confused about this detached head state. Okay. Seems I'm running out of disk quota, which is, of course, not what should happen, but also not a really big problem. Because I have already downloaded this here. So if you go into ILD config, you see that there is a few folders here, and the most important one, we will come to this, will be the standard reconstruction. Okay, as I've mentioned, ILD config also contains a few examples, and these examples can be found in standard config/production in the ILD config folder. You can either read the README, for example, with your favorite editor, or you can just click on the link on this slide here. And I will just briefly do this. And then you will be taken to a somewhat nicely formatted README on GitHub, which tells you about the contents of this standard reconstruction, how it's organized. And it will also tell you how you can actually run the simulation and the reconstruction chain. And this is what we're going to do in the next 40 to 50 minutes, probably. As I said, you can follow the steps in the README, just run the commands in the given order and everything should be fine. Some of the commands take a bit of time to run, especially the simulation and reconstruction. And while these are running, you can have a look at the configuration files, also at the input and the output files. And naturally, you can also look at the code. This can sometimes be very helpful to look directly at the code. And this is basically the plan for the next 40 to 50 minutes. This is what we are going to do. The first step is always to initialize the ILC soft environment. So if you start from a clean login shell, you will not have the software set up. And you will have to do this every time you log in somewhere. And if something doesn't work, it could very well be that your environment has a bug or something, or has been changed or altered from the desired state by some command. And if you have a problem, a really good first step to debug this is first get a clean environment and reinitialize your ILC soft environment to really make sure that the problem you are currently observing is not an ILC soft is not an environment problem, but really a problem in ILCSoft. And for the tutorial, I'm going to use the CVMFS release here. So I'm just gonna copy this here. And this will usually just run without any output and set up the complete environment. And this means that we now have a number of environment variables. For example, we have ILCSoft, which basically just points to the release that we have currently set up. So this is the CVMFS release. We use GCC 8.2 on CentOS 7, and we use version 0.2.0.2.0.2. We can also look at the folders that are here, and you can see that basically all the packages that we have seen previously on the GitHub organization can also be found here. We have a few of the usual suspects, like, for example, we have Xeon 4. We also have root. And somewhere in there, there should also be a DD4HEP. Yes, here is DD4HEP. So these are some of the things that are always there. We have LCIO, for example. So basically all the packages that belong into an ILCSoft release go into here. And if we look, for example, into the root folder, you can see the version that we have installed. And if we look into 6.18.04, you can see the usual structure of root with all the code and all the libraries in here. But I won't go into any more details here. There are a few other environment variables that are set up. For example, the DD4HEP deer, which points to the DD4HEP installation. Then we also have LCIO, which points to the LCIO installation. And a very important one, especially for this tutorial, is the LCGO deer, which points to where all the detector models are stored and can be found. And we will use this quite a bit throughout. Then we can also, we now have a few binaries that belong to ILCSoft on our path. And for example, we have DDSim, we of course have Marlin, and then there is also dump event, which we'll come to later. And if we look at the G++ version that we have, you will see that we have GCC 8.2 set up in this ILCSoft environment. And yeah, so this basically is what you get if you source this init ILCSoft script. This just sets up the environment, a few environment variables, and make sure that you use the right binaries that belong to this ILCSoft release. Now, if we want to run the simulation, in this case, we start the simulation from an STD-HEP generator file, which comes with ILD-config. It's in the examples folder, and it basically is just three events of TTBar events. So it's a rather busy environment, but it in a sense makes sure that at least everything is working, because these are probably the messiest events that we can get here. And to run the simulation, we use DDSim. We have to specify an input file. We have to specify an output file in this case. And these are basically just the first two lines. We specify an input and an output file. The compact file is related to the detector geometry that we want to use. And in this case, we use a version of the ILD detector, the large tracker in VO2. And this is basically just the path to the file where the detector is described. And finally, this steering file tells DDSim how to run the simulations. And we will have a look at these, at the last two files in a minute. First, let's just start this command, because this will take a few seconds to run, or a few minutes actually. I am really sorry, I have to clean up a bit of space. Okay. So now we are in this in this ILD config standard config production folder, and here is where we will run this ddsim command. And hopefully now it will work. Yes, it looks like it. So while this ddsim command is running in the background, we will have a brief look into this detector description file here, just to have a look on how this looks. And it's, as you can see, this is an XML file. It has a description with different metadata. And then, as you can see, it just includes a bunch of other XML files, which in more detail describe the detector model. And if we go, for example, into this file here, you can see that it just contains a few constants, which describe, for example, the magnetic field of 3.5 Tesla. It describes the outer radius of the TPC and also a few other NCAP sizes. And when we include all these files here, we build up a whole detector out of smaller components. And I won't go into all the details here because it's looking at everything is quite a challenge, or can be quite cumbersome because it's a lot of information. But in principle, you can find all the details of the detector in these XML files and have a look at these there. The second thing that we want to do is look at this ddsim-steer file to have a look on how this looks. And as you can see, this is just a normal Python file where we first get the most important part, which is this dd4hep simulation. And we get this from dd4hep, basically, from the ddsim component. And then we set up this simulation. And on this simulation sim object, we can then set different options. For example, the input files, or how many events we want to use, what the default output name should be, and this goes on for a few more hundred lines, because this is a very, very, very complete example of a simulation steering file. So if you want to have a look on what is possible with this steering file, just go into this file and you can see that all the comments are here and a more detailed description of all the things that are possible with this simulation steering file are actually in this file here. Okay. So as I said, depending on the event content and on how many events you are simulating, the simulation step might take a few minutes. It might take a few hours. It depends really on how many events you simulate and how your events look like. I think by now, yes, we are done. And we now have a sim output file, which is this output file that we specified before. So we have now successfully simulated our first events. Just at the bottom here, here's the first exercise. But as I said, it's probably best to do these exercises at the end. Okay, now that we have this output file, we can actually have a look into these LCIO files. And I think this is something Jenny also already did on her tutorial roughly a month ago. There is an executable that's called anachob that basically just dumps all the events and all the collection names with the number of object files in an LCIO file. And its pictures speak more than words. If we look into this simulation file here, you will see that at the very top, it prints the file name again, how many events are in the file, and then it just prints a bunch of metadata, and this metadata and this content in this context just contain the complete steering file again that was used to generate this file. Then there are more parameters which are all more or less interesting, but the most important part is at the bottom, it will start to print out the event contents of each event. So here we have event zero, run zero, we have the detector model, and then it prints out all the collections that are in this event. And as you can see here, we have the collection name, which is the name with which we can access this collection in our Marlin processor in the end. And each collection also has a collection type. And since we have just run the simulation, you can see there is a lot of sim calorimeter hits. There are a few sim tracker hits. There is naturally the Monte Carlo particle collection. And as you can see here in this event, we have 746 Monte Carlo particles, which produced a large number of calorimeter hits, of tracker hits through the simulation. And as you can see, there are also a few empty collections which are not filled. But in a sense, this ANA job gives you a complete overview of all the collections that are in there and also the counts of the objects in each collection. And this will be repeated for the second collection. If you look again at the Monte Carlo particles, here we have only 675. And since we have also a third event, in this simulation, we get a third event as well with the contents of this third event as well. And at the very bottom, it prints a summary again that it has written, read three events from this one file here. A second very useful tool is dump event, which will give you a much more detailed overview of the event contents than AnaJob does. And in this case, what you have to do is call dump event with an input file and the number of the event you want to look at. And we just pipe it into less here to be able to actually look at the contents more easily. And if we do that, and we look at the second event, you will see how detailed this this summary or this description of the event that you get with dump event is actually. So at the very top, you see the so-called event header. It's the first event in run zero. The timestamp is not filled in the simulation and it has wait one. And then it starts to print out all the collections that it can find. So it starts with the beam cal collection. It's a sim calorimeter hit collection, and then all the contents of this collection are in there, and it's very detailed. As you can see, it gives you for each element in this collection, it gives you all the members of each object. So a sim calorimeter hit has a cell ID 0, a cell ID 1. It has an energy, a position, etc., etc. And all these values are printed here for each element in this collection. And this will be repeated for every collection there is in this file. So if we look for MC particle, for example, you can see that there is a lot of information in this output. And this makes it possible to completely look at all the contents of an event in very much detail if you want to do so, or if you want to debug a problem in an event, for example. But most of the times, this is really just useful for debugging dedicated problems, or if you already have a hint on where the problem could be, because this is really just usually more or less an overflow of information, because it just dumps everything on you, as the name already suggests. Okay, but these anarchop job and dump event things you can do with all LCIO files, not just simulated ones, but after reconstruction, you can also look at anarchop job and you will see, for example, more collections or more event contents than after simulation. And of course, dump event gets even more noisy if you also have reconstructed objects in these collections. Now that you've seen how you can read LCIO files with these two tools here, there's a small interlude. You can also read LCIO files with Python. Because LCIO actually supports being read via Python, and this dump LCIO pi is just a very small script that basically prints all the energies of all the Monte Carlo particles. And I've already copied and pasted this into this dump LCIO.py file, which you can see. So this is how this file looks. We basically have to first get a reader, then we open an input file, and then we loop over all the events. And if we run this again with our simulated file, it will just hopefully print all the energies of all the Monte Carlo particles in all these three events, which is not a very useful thing to do in on itself, but as you can see from here, it's very easy to just open a file and have a look at the contents via Python. And this is also something you can do if you just are interested in a bunch of informations really quickly, and it doesn't have to be extremely quick, because this Python interface of LCIO introduces quite a bit of overhead, but for some interactive debugging or just having a quick look, it's actually quite nice to be able to look at the event contents with this Python interface. Okay, any questions so far? Otherwise, we will switch gears to actually run the reconstruction on the files that we have just, on the events that we have just simulated. And here again, I'm dumping the command to do this on you in this slide here. So it's a Marlin application, and each Marlin application needs a steering file, which is this Marlin standard reco here. And then we have a few input parameters that we have to pass to this steering file for it to work correctly. The most important one is this input files here, which is naturally the simulated events that we've just produced before. So I am again copying this right now and running it in the background, because similar to simulation, this will take a bit of time. And it gives us a bit of time to actually look into this Marlin standard reco XML file that we have here. I'm just gonna open that really quickly. And as you can see, it's an XML file again, and it has roughly 316 lines, which is quite a bit. And if I just scroll through this, you will see there are a few constants here. There are a few other things. And to not overload you with the details here or all the unnecessary information here, I've actually put the basic structure of such a steering file into the slides here. So every Marlin steering file follows this general structure that you can see on this slide. It has different sections or different parts. And the two sections that have to be in every Marlin steering file in order for it to be valid are the execute section, where and the global section. So, and these two sections can appear once and only once in a Marlin steering file. Otherwise, it will not be a valid Marlin steering file. And Marlin will also actually complain to you about the fact that this is not a valid Marlin steering file. Then there is an optional section processor in which you define a processor and its parameter. And then we will talk about this a bit in the next few slides. And you can also group different processors together in groups, which are then notified by this group section. I will only talk about the very basic contents of Marlin steering files in the next few slides. If you want to have a full documentation of everything that's possible, this documentation here is a link that takes you to the Marlin XML parser documentation where everything that's possible and is required is described in more details than it will be on the next few slides. Okay, the first section, the first mandatory section is execute. And in this execute section, you basically define the processors that should be run by Marlin and also the order of the of these processors that should be run. So for example, in this case, we have a MyAIDA processor that will be run before the initDD4HEP processor. After that, the VXD planner digi processor is run and all the processor until we reach the DSD output processor are run in this order for each event. And it's very important here, the processors in this section are called by their name. Because you can have different processors of the same type, but with different names. We'll come to this on the next slide. Right, so this execute section, just as a summary, defines which processors are run and in which order they are run. Then the second mandatory section is the global section, which defines a few global parameters that should be used for the job and all the processors. For example, the input files or the maximum number of event or the random seed, or for example, also how verbose the output of Marlin should be. This is all controlled via this global section here. And a very nice feature of Marlin is that you can actually overwrite global parameters on the command line. So if you want to pass in a different LCIO input file, you can do this on the command line by doing minus minus global, which is the section here, and then the parameter name, which is LCIO input files. And then you will override whatever is in the XML file by this command line parameter, which can be very nice because then you don't have to edit the XML file every time you just want to use a different input, for example. Okay, then, as I said, there is a or many processor sections, which basically just define how the processor should be used or how a processor is defined. And each processor has a name, this one, which is used in the execute section. And each processor also has a type, which is basically the C++ class that describes what this processor is doing. And then it can have a bunch of parameters, which also have to be declared in the C++ part of the processor. And you can overwrite them here in this XML file, or similar to the global section, you can overwrite this from the command line. For example, if you want to change this resolution V parameter from 0.03 to 0.06 on the command line, you can also do this without changing the XML input file. And then there are a convenience feature, the so-called constants, which is a different section again, where you can define constants which should be used throughout your XML file. For example, if you have a calibration path and this calibration path is used in many places, you just define it at the top in this constant section, and then you can use this calibration path in other parameters via these dollar braces syntax that is also familiar from Bash, for example. And yeah, this makes it possible to easily configure many parameters with the same value if you define a constant for it, for example. And as before, constants can also be overwritten on the command line. Okay, and I hope by now our reconstruction is done. And I think it is. Yes. As you can see here, we have a rec file now. So reconstructed file, and the standard reconstruction also produces a DST file, which is what was used by the previous tutorial by Jenny and Alexander. And if you look now into this rec file with AnaChop, you can see that compared to previously where we only had SIM calorimeter hit and Monte Carlo particles, we now have really a bunch of more collections. We have I don't know how many collections actually we have, but we have quite a few additional collections which are ordered here in alphabetically by their name. Right, we still have the Monte Carlo particle from before, and we also have the Pandora PFOs, which is the most important collection after reconstruction, because this is basically after doing the tracking reconstruction and the calorimeter reconstruction, we also run the Pandora PFA on all of the tracks and clusters. And this is the output of this particle flow analysis, is this reconstructed particle collection, which is called Pandora PFOs. And this is probably what you will be using the most, I would say. Or at least to start with, you will be mainly using this Pandora PFO collection here. As I said, this reconstructed file is still in SLCIO file, or it's not a root file. You can read it with root, we'll come to this, but in this ILD config, we also have a steering file that allows you to use this reconstructed file and produce a somewhat flat root T3 from it. And I will just run it really briefly because this is a lot faster than before and it's already done. And you can see we have this standard reco LC tuple. And if we open this, like this, and look at the contents of the first event here, you can see that it has a bunch of very short branch names, which of course follow a certain system, which is described here. I won't go into too much detail here. This slide is just here for completeness, to give you a hint on how to interpret these branch names here. And I also just want to say that this LC tuple exists to produce basically flat root T3s, which can then be used in more root style analysis. But a second approach is actually to use LCIO directly in root macros, which is possible. And for this to work, you basically just have to load the root dictionary. You can either do this via your root logon and just load this lib-lcio dict, or just at the very top of your macro, put these three lines and should load the lcio dictionary, and then you can use lcio types in your root macro. And this is what we are doing here. I have just put here the contents of this read SLCIO macro that I've put here. It doesn't do anything spectacular. It's just a very minimal example of what you have to do. So first you have to load the dictionary. Then you have to include a few headers that you want to use. And then the only thing that you have to do is you have to create a so-called LC reader. and open the LCIO file. And then you can loop over all the events in this file with this while loop, basically just reading all the events that are in there. And I am really not doing anything with this macro here other than printing out the number of particles, of MC particles that we have in the simulated file. And just to prove that it's actually working, you see that we have 746, 675, or 734 Monte Carlo particles in the simulated files here. And I would say this is the preferred way to work with root with LCIO, because the LC tuple names, or at least for me, they are a bit undecipherable. But it is possible to get flat T-trees from Marlin directly if you want to do so. But you can also fill histograms by writing such a short root macro and actually looping over the events manually. Okay, any questions so far? If not, the next section would be how to create your own Marlin package. What needs to be done in order for you to get your own Marlin package? And just as a reminder, I have talked about the Marlin processor and that every task is implemented as a processor. And this is the interface of the Marlin processor. So if you want to write your own processor, you declare it as a class and you derive from the Marlin processor. And then you have to, it's mandatory to override this new processor function, but this is really trivial. It's really just returning a new pointer to yourself, basically. And then depending on what you want to do, you can, but you don't have to override either either of these five functions here. So if you don't have to do anything special in init, you basically can skip it. Or if you don't have to do anything special with run headers, you can skip it as well. But for most processors that do any meaningful work, you will probably have to do something in event. So you will have to write override process event. And since writing your own processor is quite a bit of overhead, the easiest thing to do usually is to copy the my Marlin example that comes with Marlin directly. And what you do is basically you copy this example, and then this example can be built from scratch completely. And as I said, it's just an example processor. It doesn't do anything meaningful, but this slide basically is the executive summary of what you have to do to get a processor to work and to run. And usually you start from this example here and then you build it. You have to install it. And this is the canonical build sequence, since all these processes are actually CMake projects. You basically make a build directory, you change into the build directory, you run CMake, and then you compile and install the processor. And finally, it's very important to actually make Marlin aware of this new processor. And to do this, you have to edit this Marlin DLL environment variable. This basically just lists all the available libraries in which processors are available to Marlin. And if you have a look into this, you can see that it's really just a colon separated list of paths to different libraries. And if you want to have your own processor, you compile it into a library and then add it to this Marlin DLL thing. Finally, you can also easily create a steering file just for your package by setting this Marlin DLL to just contain your processor and then call it Marlin minus X and piping everything into a steering into an output file. If you just do Marlin minus X, it will print all the available processors, so everything that's available into the steering file, which is probably not what you want since you usually just want to steer your own processor. Okay, so now we are going to create our own Marlin package. And to do this, I'm going to go to here, where everything started. And first, I am copying. I have to look this up every time.
Hi, Thomas. May I add a comment here while you are typing? Yeah. You very nicely introduced now at least three ways to read SCIO files, right? I mean, directly in root using the dictionary or using the conversion to an LC tuple or to write your own Marlin processor. And maybe it's good to say as a general guidance, I mean, whenever you start to develop some more serious analysis, at the end of the day, you typically end up really writing Marlin processors, if you really want to do, because you soon and also want to improve something of the high level reconstruction or whatever. Yeah. So of course the question is then if you just, you typically don't start out by this, by you just start out by doing some quick plots and so on, and you do more, and at some point you want to have this then in a Marlin processor. And I think one big advantage of using directly these root dictionaries is that any code which you write in that way is relatively easily transferred then later on if you, into a Marlin processor, because it basically really uses the class structure of the event data model, while when you use this LC tuple thing, you are of course decoupled sort of into a root world where then every variable has a different name and it's a flat end tuple and so on and so forth. I mean, this just as a strategic remark.
No, it's actually, but it's actually an excellent point, because the main difference between a processor and just a root macro where you use the dictionary is that the processor does all of this. So basically opening the file and setting up the event loop, this is all done by the processor, and everything that you do in this while loop can in principle stay the same if you just copy it from a macro to a processor in the end. So if you have a root macro with this dictionary approach, it's, as Jenny said, it's almost trivial to turn it into a processor in the end. And the processor takes care of managing everything that's going on around, like opening the correct files and then reading the next event. But the main meat where you actually do your work, that can stay the same. And yeah, as Jenny said, actually a very good point to start with this and not with the LC tuple in this case. Okay, so now that we've highlighted the advantages of writing a processor, let's actually do it. What I've done now is I've copied this example into a folder which I call awesome processor, because it will be an awesome processor in the end. And now we have to do a few renamings. And the first one is in the C make lists, where we have this project my Marlin, and we will call it awesome processor because this is what it will be in the end. And then we also have to rename this my processor. If you look into include, by default, if you just copy it, it will be called my processor. So we will have to rename this to as well, and there is a similar source file that we have to of course only if you don't make mistakes in between. And if I haven't managed to screw up everything right now, then I have to. Okay, then we will have to, because of course we have just renamed the things now, but we will, the class is still the same, and this class name should correspond to the file name, because otherwise it will just get very, very confusing if in the file awesomeprocessor.h you will define your my processor. Let's just do that real quickly and do the same here. Okay, now that we've renamed everything, we go back to this canonical build sequence. We make a build directory, we change into it. And then whenever you create a new processor, it's always the same command. You do cmake. We load a bunch of cmake configuration, which is distributed centrally so that everything is consistent. And then cmake will run, set up everything. This should only take a few seconds. And if I didn't make any mistakes now, simply typing make should now work. We have a few warnings, but this is just because our processor doesn't do anything useful at the moment. And if you do make install, this processor will be installed. And we will now be able to actually use this processor in Marlin if we wanted to do so. So if we go back one thing and we do Marlin. And just notice that the name of the library you are creating is always the same name that you put into the project at the very top of the CMake lists. So this is how you control this, the name of the library. And if we now dump the configuration just for this processor, you can see that we now have a section here, processor, which is called my awesome processor. It's of type awesome processor, and it has only one parameter, the collection name. And indeed, if we look into the definition of this processor in the constructor, we can actually register an input collection, or we can also register other parameters, but this input collection has as parameter name this collection name, and this is the only parameter of this collection of this processor. We can give it a default name, and we can now configure which collection we want to use via this parameter, which we can then change in the XML steering file. And then we don't do anything useful in the init of this processor. We just reset the run number to zero and the event number to zero. We increment the run number in process run header. And then in process event, I won't go through this in too much detail, but just here you can actually do useful things. And in this line here, we actually get the collection from the event. And this is basically the same thing you would do in the while loop in your root macro. And with this collection, you can then do different things. I'm not sure what we actually do here. Here we just get, we loop over all the collections in the event and we fill a histogram with all the Monte Carlo particle energies. So this is basically everything that we are doing here and then nothing else. And then we also can override the check function. We don't do anything here. And we can also override the end function. And we also don't do anything useful in this case here. But this is basically the basic structure that you would use to start writing your own processor. You can either start from scratch, or if you don't want to do this complete setup yourself, it's maybe easier to just copy the example processor and do a few renamings and then start from there. Yeah, and this is basically the final exercise would be to adapt this example processor to actually do something useful or do other things than it currently does. Yeah, this is everything I have. I have on the slide after the questions, I have a few useful resources which gives you an entry into the whole world if you want to have more details, or basically also just collecting some of the links that have been thrown around in the slides before this, again on this slide here. And this is basically everything I have. And I hope you learned something and it wasn't too confusing. And as usual, I have to apologize for actually trying to do something interactively, which I realized time and time again, it just doesn't work as intended, but I hope you still got the necessary information, or at least now know more about ILCSoft and Marlin processors than you did before.
Great. Thank you very much, Thomas. This was an excellent tutorial. We're recording this, so if this was too fast for people, they can go back and look at this at their own pace. And I do think that these interactive tutorials are very valuable, because that's the whole problem, right? If things don't work, that's where people get stuck. And if they see you solving it, at least that helps. If everything goes smoothly in the tutorial, people try this at home, this never goes smoothly, and then they don't know how to fix it. So I think this is very valuable to go through this. So thanks for preparing this. Yeah, are there questions? Don't be shy. Unmute yourself. I think you're all muted. Unmute yourself and then just ask away.
I just raised a hand. This is Antonio. Just a couple of questions. You probably mentioned during the presentation, but there was a lot of information. So just wondering, maybe if you could review a little bit the 2 points. So if I would like to produce the flat and tuples that you mentioned, I think LDC tuple, right? And how quickly, if you could review quickly, how I could do that. And also using this Python package that you mentioned to read the files. How can I can install the Python package and what's needed?
Yeah, so I have been too fast on these two things. So I'm going to go to Python first, because it's the easier question to answer. If you set up the ILCSoft environment in a somewhat current release, so VO202 and the patch releases of VO202, this should work without any additional setup. So you should then be able to open up Python and then do from PyLCIO import whatever you need to import. And this should work without problems, because the complete environment of ILCSoft or of an ILCSoft is set up that this works. As always, it works on my machine. In principle, if you are in an ILCSoft environment, it should work. If you are not in an ILCSoft environment, what you have to do is you have to put the root libraries onto your Python path, and also the LCIO dictionary has to be on the Python path. And if these two things are on Python path and potentially also an LD library path, this is everything that's needed. Jenny has her hand raised. I'm not sure if it's to Python or to the LC tuple.
That was a comment on the ILCSoft setup. I'm not sure whether it's clear to people when they have an ILCSoft soft setup and what they really need to do. Because I mean, typically, if you have AFS or CVMFS, then it's as easy, right, as here. Huh? So I think that is So whatever, if your computer has any of these remote file system, then it's as easy as here. If you just want to use the root dictionary part to read LCIO files, you only need to, and you don't have this, right? So for the case that you cannot have AFS or CVMFS, then it's I think very easy to install just LCIO, right? Yeah, there's a GitHub page for that. If you really want for your full own local ILCSoft installation, I would say that's a bit more advanced, right?
I was going to say we have these Snowmass tutorials for how to read and analyze LCIO files. Uh-huh. So that's a very good starting point. There's also videos about this. So the Snowmass tutorials are a good point for just analyzing existing LCIO files.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're not in an ILCSoft environment, LCIO can be installed rather easily. And also the root dictionaries can be built easily with LCIO. It's all described on the LCIO GitHub page. And then you are able to read LCIO files also in Python, even if the rest of ILCSoft is missing. And for producing the LC tuples, there is this Marlin standard Rico LC tuple.xml steering file. This is part of ILD config. And in this steering file, you have a bit of control over how the contents of the LC tuple will be. But to actually run this, you also need Marlin, which is, of course, a bit harder to install than just LCIO, because it depends on quite a bit of other packages in ILCSoft. And if you want to have Marlin, you're probably, it's the easiest to do a full installation of ILCSoft, but that can be quite a bit of work, especially on systems on which it hasn't been tested, for example. So Python is a bit easier, but for actually producing these LC tuples, you probably need a full installation of ILCSoft in any case. And it's possible to configure this LC tuple output via this Marlin standard Rico LC tuple. But the naming scheme is unfortunately not something that can be changed. That is programmed in this tuple producing processor here.
All right, thanks.
Right, there's a question about where to find these Snowmass tutorials. Can you maybe try to Google this? Sorry, I don't have a link off the top of my head here.
Neither.
Well, if you Google Snowmass tutorials, what happens? How easy is it to
find
that?
But Daniel has just put a link into
it. Perfect. Thank you, Daniel.
I think that's a perfect starting point.
Great. Oh, very good. Yes, I should remember this. ilcsnowmass.org. Very good. Other questions and comments? So for other questions, I don't remember if you had this in your slide deck. You pointed to the GitHub page for LCIO and for LCSoft. Where are other points of contact that people can ask for help?
Sorry, I have to unmute. I'm not sure if email addresses are actually visible here. One thing you can also do is to write to the ILC software conveners mailing list, I suppose, for questions. Or if it's questions directly related to a given package, it's most of the times the easiest if you just open an issue there. And there is also a Confluence page, which I also didn't put into the links, I think, with more information about ILD and the organizational structure. No, I didn't put it here, but if you go to ILD Anasoft, the top link here is a Confluence page at DESI, which has more information about ILD in general, also the ILD working groups, and there the ILD software working group is one way to get into contact with us. And here it's also the link to the mailing list and to the weekly / bi-weekly meetings that we have every Wednesday that you can also join.
Great, thanks Thomas.
Sorry if this is more of a sort of technical question, but Thomas, I have tried before to install the whole ILCSoft in somewhat remote, not so well networked environments. And I was wondering if there was any way one could sort of make it a little bit easier to just say, for example, have Marlin as this overarching process, a package that doesn't have all these dependencies. Or is that something that's really hard to break, because it, like, for analysis and creating your own processor and doing things that don't depend on too many other packages except for reading LCIO and root and maybe Python and stuff, if you could install root, LCIO and Marlin without all the dependencies, it would be much easier
for just reading LCIO. You don't need Marlin, right?
No, but if you want to write a processor for reading, you would need Marlin. And I'm not sure actually how hard it would be to install Marlin more or less just on top of LCIO. The problem could be that it's somewhat closely connected to the geometry, and that of course the geometry, the detector geometry, pulls in DD4HEP, and that has a lot of dependencies, and I think that is could be a problem, but I'm actually not sure if it's a mandatory dependency of Marlin. I would have to check, but I could get back to you.
Yeah, I was suspecting it was something that would probably need some refactoring for the future, but if it was a direction that made sense. But in the context of developing code that's more generally useful, I was thinking that the Marlin processors was the most useful way to proceed. But it would be good if I could port this to kind of my local HPC cluster.
Yeah. I will have a look actually to see if and what's possible at the moment.
So on that front, I think I wouldn't overthink it. I think developing the algorithm is more important than having the correct implementation off the bat.
Yeah,
it'll take iterations to get the algorithm right. And just, I'm sorry, doing that in C++ is a pain. It's more important to get the algorithm right and to understand, you know, what talks to what and in what order do you need to sort the collections and how to access and combine things. And then once that's clear, then implementing that in C++ is a lot easier than going through all of this all the way through C++. But that's just my preference. I find just debugging is harder than in other environments. Okay, other questions? Okay, very good. We've reached 8 o'clock here. It's getting very late in Japan. I guess we have the point of contact. So if there's follow-on questions, please get in touch. And otherwise, let's give Thomas a round of applause with the reactions. Thank you, Thomas. This was a very, very good overview.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so then we will end the session here, and we hope to see many of you again in a month when we will learn more about vertexing and LCFI+. Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of your week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.